Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
If Republicans don't challenge and change the U.S. election system, there'll never be another Republican president elected again. President Trump should not concede.
That was U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham, South Carolina, talking about the consequences of not stopping the theft of this election. We live in perilous times, and as you may have guessed, this is not Bob Siegel. This is Mike Friedenberg. I am on fairly regularly as a guest. Have the honor of sitting in for Bob tonight. He's out of town visiting friends and family, so he asked me to do the show, and I was very honored to do so. So we have a packed show tonight. We're going to be talking post-election analysis. And Lindsey Graham, you know, at the high level, he said, which I hate to say may be true, if we let the Democrats and the left get away with what they're doing right now, and this is an all-out theft of the election. It's not minor fraud. It's not, you know, an occasional fraud. It is widespread, deep, massive fraud. It is determinative fraud. And determinative means that if the fraud is removed and addressed, Trump wins multiple states. That right now, the media, the left-wing media, and unfortunately now Fox News is saying that Trump lost. He didn't lose those states, and we're going to show that as we go through the evening here. But first, let's talk a little bit why this election is important. Obviously, if you're coming from a conservative, you know, Christian, pro-Western civilization viewpoint, you knew that this election was important going into it. And you may have been one of those people, and I have to admit, they got to me. The polls were oppressive. Trump didn't have a chance. I did some analysis, and you may recall that I predicted that Trump would win. I still stand by that analysis in terms of, you know, when you actually count legal votes and not counting fraudulent, illegal votes, I still say Trump won. But it was oppressive. And we also saw the revelations of the Biden fraud, that partnership with the Sun to rake in millions of dollars of income that was documented with business documents, corroborated emails, and the press completely shut it down. Now, obviously, some people found out about it, but the poll was just recently conducted that said up to 5% of Biden voters said they would not have voted for Biden if they understood the depth of the corruption with Biden. So they shut that down, and now we're seeing the exact sort of media blackout right now with the massive fraud that took place. Hundreds and hundreds of affidavits signed under penalty of perjury that fraud anywhere from not allowing Republicans to reserve votes. That's probably the most major thing we're going to talk about tonight, to 100,000 votes coming in at 4:30 in the morning, all Biden in the middle of the night being counted, every one of those votes a Biden vote with no Republican observers. And we have sworn affidavits for people saying that was in Michigan. These are the kind of numbers of votes that change the election. So it's very important. Why is it important? Well, President Trump was under assault in the entire first 4 years, and he's still under assault of his presidency. There was a lot of things he got done, but a lot of things he was not able to get done because he was basically just really, I mean, it was somewhat miraculous that he did survive the first 4 years. He had the deep state against him. He had the intelligence community working against him. He had a hostile press that would refuse to report his accomplishments and lied. And so at the end of his term here, the deep state's still there. A lot of those intelligence agents that worked against him are still there. And so if he leaves office, we're still going to have a corrupt U.S. intelligence agency, including the DOJ, including the FBI, including the CIA. That's not good, folks. So, and they'll be further entrenched with Biden being in there for the next 4 years, or Kamala Harris, potentially, whenever she steps in, which could be pretty soon. So letting them steal this election is not an option. Okay. And then we take a look at the executive orders. There's been some talk, I don't think they'll do this, but there's been some talk of actually literally tearing down the 400 miles of walls he built. I don't think they'll do that, but there's been that talk. There's a talk of loosening and, you know, loosening regulations to make it easier for illegal immigrants to come to the United States. There's talk of tax increases. And of course, if we don't win the Georgia, we don't win at least one of the races in Georgia on January 5th, then there could be talk of stacking the court. But right now, I don't want to talk about January 5th. I don't want to talk about 2022 or 24, because I think people that are talking about that are taking their eye off the ball. I heard a prominent, you know, Fox talk show host talking about, oh, it will be so exciting to see Trump come back in 2024. Well, he'll be 78 in 2024. And I think it's completely unrealistic to get all excited about what things are going to be like in 2024. We don't know what they're going to be like in 2022. That takes me to 2022. People talking about the red wave in 2022. We'll be so outraged about what's happened under Biden in these two coming 2 years that we'll take back the House. Possible, but think about this. What we've seen with the media, the big media, the censoring from the social media, another 2 years where stories that would undercut the Biden presidency and the Democrat majority are completely ignored or lied about, and anything to damage the Republicans is put forth. So I'd really, the next 2 years here, I wouldn't count on a great 2022. So let's not talk about 2022 and 2024. And for right now, even though it is important, let's not talk about January 5th, 2021 and the Georgia race. Let's talk about not letting the Democrats and the left steal the race. And that's what it is. They're stealing the race. Trump won. He got more votes on Election Day in the states that he needed to get for the electoral votes than did Biden. All right. That's what I'm going to show you tonight. That is my claim, and I'm going to show it tonight. As a way to start on this, let's just sort of figure out what happened. Well, I want to say that we had a red wave. Before the election, we had a consensus from the mainstream media and the pollsters that are funded by the mainstream media that the Republicans were going to lose 12 to 15 House seats. And that was given a high probability by sites like 538 and Nate Silver's there. But today, as we're sitting here today, we're talking about the Republicans poised to win 11 to 13 seats. So that's a 23 to 28 seat swing from the Democrat liberal left predictions and the pollsters' predictions before the election. Major polling sites were giving Republicans only a 30% chance or so to hold the Senate. Currently, we're down only one seat, and we are favored to retain the final two seats in Georgia. State legislatures. Now, these are very important, and we'll talk about that a little bit. Going into the election day, the GOP controlled 58 legislative chambers, while the Democrats controlled 40. And this figure excludes Nebraska's unicameral legislature, which is nonpartisan, and it counts the Alaska House as Democratic since there was a coalition led by Democrats that basically effectively controlled that House in Alaska. The Cook Political Report was rating 15 Republican-held legislative chambers as competitive this year compared to just 5 Democrat-held chambers. So that was a big hill to climb if we believe what the polls were telling us and everything like that going into Election Day. The results are we didn't lose a chamber. Republicans lost no chambers. In fact, we picked up 2 chambers in the sense that we picked up both the House and the Senate for New Hampshire. And Alaska looks like it moved more solidly Republican, which means the Republicans there should be able to build the coalition that allows them to control that state legislature. So why are these state legislatures so important? Well, as we're learning, it's the state legislatures by constitution that set election law. They set how we conduct our elections. And sadly, this time around, a number of Republican state legislators got frightened into allowing some changes in election law that were just horribly damaging to our country and to our nation. And that is the wholesale use of mail-in ballots. And it gets worse as we move along here. We're going to discover in Georgia, we just found out in March, the Secretary of State there signed a consent decree under the pressure from Stacey Abrams, who's never conceded the race there, that he would not verify signatures. Now, okay, that's crazy. That's crazy. That is basically saying, come, please commit fraud, and you're an idiot if you don't. That's what it says. So right now, what we need is the Georgia State Legislature to sit there and say, hey, that was illegal. You couldn't do that. That was our purview. And we need the state legislatures to start really standing up and making some noise about what happened here. That includes in Pennsylvania. That includes in Michigan. So we need these state legislatures to stand up because they're the ones that determine election law. And that's going to be the basis, by the way, for a number of what I believe are potentially successful lawsuits that probably have to get to the Supreme Court. Maybe it'll some federal appeals courts, because most of these state courts are not very friendly to Republicans. So if you see us losing in these state courts, that was expected. And now the press is going to trumpet it, try to discourage us. And that's what this, by the way, this whole huge oppressive propaganda campaign by the media that Biden won. And if you go to Google, you cannot find an article debating that point. All you can do is find articles about anything refuting the idea that Biden won is disinformation. It's silly. It's crazy, crazy talk. And page after page after page after page is like that. So a little bit later in the show, I'm going to give you some resources that will keep you up to date on what's happening, what's really happening with the vote and with the efforts to stop the stealing of the election, including how to get around Google and use Google effectively. And that's a little bit of a feat, but I'll explain how to do it. So the state legislatures are incredibly important, and we not only maintained them after being, you know, being told we were probably to lose, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, we actually picked up an entire state legislature, both the House and the Senate in New Hampshire. So that was huge. Then we go to the governorships. We had 11 governorships up for election, 7 Republicans and 4 Democrats. Four of the Republican races were thought to be competitive in battlegrounds, and 2 of the Democrats. In each case, there was 1 incumbent Republican, 1 incumbent Democrat. Well, the Republicans didn't lose a race. In fact, they picked up 3 governorships. So starting in 2021, Republicans are going to hold 27 governorships to the Democrats' 23. That's pretty amazing. So what we have here, I mean, we're looking at a red wave here. But let me read something to you. Randy DeSoto of the Western Journal. One must believe that Donald Trump was pretty much the only incumbent president in U.S. history to lose re-election while his own party gained seats in the House of Representatives. Bottom line is, this does not happen. You do not have this kind of overwhelmingly positive response for a party and have the person who generated the turnout lose the race. That doesn't happen. That's statistically highly unlikely, maybe not as unlikely as getting struck by lightning and surviving and then dying by being hit by a meteor, but very unlikely. Let's put it this way. You wouldn't bet any kind of money on the kind of odds of that happening. Yet, in this election cycle, it happened. So we have Donald Trump generating 73 million votes, about 12 million more votes than in 2016. He made historic gains with black Americans, increased black American vote by 50%. About 18% of black males registered, voted for Donald Trump. And about, I think he moved from 4 to maybe 8% of black women, which that was a huge gain. Black women don't like Donald Trump very much, but he made some gains there. And then we saw an explosion of support from the Hispanic community. And contrary to all the polling, he didn't lose all the suburban housewife white women. He actually did just about as well as he did in 2016. In fact, that was that hidden vote. Those are the people the pollsters did not pick up. Those are the people that are talking on the phone and would not admit they were going to vote for Donald Trump, but they came out and voted for him anyway because they didn't like the idea of people marauding down the streets, smashing and burning and looting and killing. Okay, so they voted for Donald Trump. So all this happened here, and somehow we're supposed to believe that Donald Trump lost the election. And that he lost it in the swing states. He lost it in Pennsylvania, where on October 31st, 55 to 60,000 people turned out at 10 o'clock in the evening in Butler County in 40-degree weather to cheer on Donald Trump. We have never seen these kind of rallies here. And what I'm going to tell you here is there was a red wave in those swing states where Donald Trump put the time into. That includes Wisconsin. That includes Michigan. That includes Pennsylvania. And to some degree, and he wasn't there as often, but even Georgia. He did not lose Georgia. There were some things that happened, and we're going to talk about those momentarily, that explain what happened there. So let's get to election night. And heading into election, by the way, there's various solutions out there that help you track early voting. And what they do is they look at Republican and Democrats, but they also model voter behavior. So they can take a look and say, hey, this person turned out to vote in a Republican primary, even a state where they don't have partisan registration. If the person's always turning out to vote in Republican primaries or turning out for certain things, they can say, hey, this person is really a Republican. So Target Smart, and I looked at it thoroughly, and other people agreed, the Democrats weren't doing nearly well enough in the early voting analysis to win these races. They weren't. They were behind. So what happened? On election night, we have Trump ahead in Pennsylvania by 800,000 votes. We have Trump ahead in Michigan by 200,000 or 300,000 votes. We have Trump significantly ahead in Wisconsin, Georgia. Then, all of a sudden, in what's been coordinated, we had a number of cities, Phoenix, Las Vegas, Atlanta, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Detroit. Let's see if I'm missing one there. But there was at least six or seven of them where they said, oh, we're going to stop counting. They shut down the counting, and they shooed all the observers away. But they didn't really shut down counting because an hour or two later, we find out that they resumed counting. So what happened? We've never had this before. And then the next day, in state after state, city after city, Republican observers were flat out not allowed in, or they were harassed. There's in Michigan, in the Detroit area, we have, you know, Republican observer women being called the C word. I mean, it was vicious and nasty. They were not allowed in. So we have in Pennsylvania the next day and the next following days, 630,000 votes where the Republican observers were not allowed to see those votes. Now, not only is that illegal, but that's fraud. When you stop the campaign and voters from being able to observe, that's which, by the way, that's Pennsylvania law, and it's also the Constitution, you are committing a fraud on the campaign and the voters. That's fraud. 630,000 illegally cast votes. In Pennsylvania itself, in the past, they've had elections overturned and set aside for just a few of those types of incidences of people being observers being not being allowed to observe the vote. Those voters had no idea whether those signatures were valid or not. They had no way to inspect those envelopes to see if they're valid or not. 630,000 flowed through there. 300,000 flowed through Michigan. In Nevada, it's estimated something in the area of 600,000 votes flowed through, and so forth and so on. These are determinative numbers. These are the kind of numbers that can change the election, the called election by the media, to the real election with the real votes, the legal votes, to President Donald Trump. So there's a lot more stuff out there that's going on that you may not have heard about, but that is the number one legal case. And we'll be talking about some of the other very important things when we come back.
This is Bob Siegel. Looking for a church? Maybe not. Perhaps you've had your fill of churches. Maybe you even grew up in the church. Maybe as a kid you were dragged to Sunday school against your will. Maybe you used to throw spit wads as Mrs. Pumpernickel tried desperately to interest you in the missionary journeys of the Apostle Paul. You may have grown up listening to long sermons, anxiously looking at your watch to see how much of the game you were missing at home on TV as the pastor made his 97th point. Or perhaps you were not raised as a Christian at all. Instead, you have merely encountered Christians. Maybe some obnoxious personality tried to shove the gospel down your throat using all the tact of a lawnmower in a barber shop. Well, my friend, perfect Christians don't exist because perfect people don't exist. That's why Jesus died for our sins. So I'm not going to tell you that the people of Skyline Church are perfect. I'm just going to tell you that we come real close. No, actually, you'll just find people who struggle with life the same as you. But we're honest about the struggle, and we help each other with the struggle. What you will find is a church that takes the love of Jesus Christ seriously. After all, his message is one of mercy and inclusion, and we don't need 97 points to talk about God. Ask anybody. Our sermons have never made more than 96 points.
Skyline Church.
It was a Christian advertisement for a Christian bookstore being broadcast over, you guessed it, a Christian radio station. According to the friendly commercial, this was no ordinary run-of-the-mill bookstore. They had more than just books. They had items that would be of interest to women also. For you men, commentaries, concordances, Greek lexicons, and for you women, perfume, jewelry, and praise tapes. True story. Extreme example. Now, I know there are different Christian viewpoints about whether women should submit to men or whether women could teach men, but I would think that whatever your viewpoint is, you would think that women have a right to find that a little bit insulting. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
This is Mike Friedenberg sitting in for Bob Siegel on The Bob Siegel Show. And Bob is out of town enjoying time with his lovely wife, visiting friends and family. Thank you for joining us this evening. So we were talking about the anomaly that was a red wave election that didn't elect Donald Trump president. And before we look at some of the numbers and the statistics, facts, I do want to mention something I think is important to get out there is people are frustrated and wondering what they can do. So I'm going to mention a few things that you can do, and I'll mention it at the end of the show as well. Number one is we were very happy to see Congressman Daryl Issa elected here in the San Diego area. He won a nice, handy margin of victory. And what we need all our congressmen to do and state legislators to do is to be really upfront and out there doing press conferences, doing press releases, saying not only do they support the president's right to legally challenge the votes, as is his legal right, but also to look at the masses of evidence that voter fraud occurred and just say, we're not going to stand for voter fraud. We stand with the president and uncovering this voter fraud. We stand with the president and stopping the steal of the election. Anything else is sort of you're in the squishy middle, because the people that are saying, well, we support the president's right to legally address and exhaust all his legal means to contest the election, those people aren't really standing with the president. They're still sort of standing behind him, letting him take the shots. And this was outright fraud on a mass scale. It's apparent. It's obvious for anybody who's willing to look. And so that middle position saying you support the president's legal right is wimping out. You need to be talking about election fraud and not stealing the election, because if you don't do that, the Republican Party is going to become an irrelevant, permanent, minor party. Like, if you like being in the state legislature here in California, then that's what it's going to be like for us in the country. Okay, so we need every elected Republican official to have the guts to stand with President Trump on this and call out what is obvious. So that's number one. So call Congressman Issa and let him know that you really want him to be out front there supporting the president, and you want him to be out there and in being part of stopping the stealing of this election. Number two, you can contribute to the Trump campaign, DonaldJTrump.com. Right now, they need money because they are employing lots and lots of attorneys. But beyond that, the left is watching that. The other Republican congressmen are watching how that side is doing. How much are they raising? How much support does the president have? That shows support for the cause. So it's good for public relations. It's good for the morale of the people fighting to stop the stealing. And also they actually need the money. So please do contribute. I know many of you contributed before. I did, by the way, contribute before the election, and I've contributed after the election. So please do that. And finally, I'm going to say this year, with this overwhelming, oppressive media campaign to coronate and install an illegitimate Joe Biden to the presidency, the pressure is amazing. You can't go anywhere and not find it just pounding on you. And I'm going to give you some sources that will help you get by all that propaganda, but it's oppressive. And this is not only about demoralizing us, but it's also about putting pressure on the judges and the justices that have to make these critical decisions. And we need to be praying for them, for their courage and their clarity. They really need it, because not only are they going to be maybe social pariahs if they don't go the right way, but as we've seen over this last year, many of them, and quite rightfully so, are thinking about their personal safety. They're thinking about the safety of their family. That's the kind of environment the left has created, of an environment of intimidation and threatened violence. So they need to be prayed for. Pray for them and their protection, but pray for them to have the courage and the clarity to make the right decisions, because these are clear-cut constitutional issues. There's no gray areas here. If the Supreme Court allows those illegal votes from those states where no Republican voters stand, we've lost. It's very bad. I don't want to get too gloomy here, but it'd be very, very bad for the country. That means we'll have lost that court. It would be very bad and sad. But let's get back to looking at some of the election details here. So we have an election where the candidate the media has declared lost had coattails. President Trump. But the candidate that supposedly won the most votes ever didn't have coattails. In fact, he had negative coattails. That just doesn't make sense. That doesn't happen. That just doesn't happen here. So Richard Barris, who is one of the most accurate pollsters out there, he's from Big Data Polling, and he had everything called very closely in Florida. He knows Florida well. He also had things very called very close, I believe, in Michigan and Pennsylvania. Anyway, he makes the statement, you know, post-election analysis. Trump won the largest non-white vote share for a Republican presidential candidate in 60 years. Biden underperformed Hillary Clinton in every major metro area around the country, save for Milwaukee, Detroit, Atlanta, and Philadelphia. Is that a coincidence that these big Democrat machines known, Democrat machine areas known for vote fraud, are the places where he overperformed, but every place else where there was actually some voter integrity, where they actually verified signatures, he underperformed? Is that a coincidence? I think not. So, now this is from Robert Barnes, who is one of the foremost demographics analysts for elections. He's an expert on elections and knows the elections going back 100 years, what happened in every demographic, which people group. He can tell you about the anti-war Norwegian vote in Wisconsin. I learned about that from him. I didn't know that before, but he knows about it. Anyway, here's his statement on this. One must believe urban Democratic turnout was mostly flat or even down, except in the big cities in swing states run by Democrats, where in some cases the vote even exceeded the number of registered voters before Election Day. Now, that's a very carefully worded statement. Let me read that last part again. The vote even exceeded the number of registered voters before Election Day. That's Robert Barnes. Now, that's craziness, but it's theoretically possible because a lot of these states allow day of the election registration. So theoretically, it's possible. For example, Wisconsin certified the registered voters on November 1st. That's the last numbers we saw up to now. I think the next reporting period will be the 16th. And then theoretically, you had some people come the day of the vote to register, and maybe people the day before because he had a couple days. In the past, that's been 1-3%. Well, Kimberly Stossel of the Wall Street Journal did an analysis, and she came up with numbers like you'd have to have, you know, throughout the country, like 900,000 people doing day of the voting registration. The numbers are possible, but highly improbable. So Robert Barnes' statement stands. We had some craziness going on there. So why do we have this craziness? I mean, these things are kind of obvious. Do you think the Democrats like to, I mean, they were brazen. They just flat shut out. In city after city, they shut out Republican observers. Do you think they wanted to do this? Probably not. There was voter fraud in 2016, but they were caught off guard by how well Donald Trump did in 2016. And and you remember how long it took to declare Pennsylvania? Remember we kept waiting, saying, why are they waiting for? Well, that was calls going back and forth as they were frantically trying to do what they did this election, but they had not stocked up enough votes. They didn't have that huge surplus of mail-in ballots sent out of here, and they couldn't make up the deficit. Finally, Pennsylvania was called with something like a 20,000 vote margin, very narrow for Donald Trump. That's what was going on in 2016. In 2020, they were better prepared. They had been doing voter fraud type activities, and we'll talk about some of those, all along. But the day of the vote, the day of the election, vote for Donald Trump surprised them. It surprised Republican analysts. Now, my son will tell me that it didn't surprise him because he was convinced that Donald Trump was going all along, and he reads a lot of alternative sources. So he wasn't surprised, but most everybody else was surprised, okay? I can tell you, okay? And so they were in a panic. What could they do? And we'll be talking about some of the tools they had available. So they shut down voting in those cities. They said they shut down voting and they came up with a plan. And this is something we've never seen done before. And they had to be so blatant and so brazen because they had so many votes to make up. They had to make up hundreds and hundreds of thousands of votes. Now, they might not have tried in 2016, but think about going into that race, going into November 3rd. What had they seen? They had seen the mainstream media do a complete blackout of all the tons of evidence on Biden corruption. signed affidavits, business documents, corroborated emails. They had done a complete blackout on that. And they thought, hey, we can probably get away with this because the media will do a complete blackout on this as well. And so far, they're pretty much right. Even Fox has now joined this blackout on all the evidence, the huge amount of evidence of massive voter fraud. We are getting a media blackout, just like we saw for Biden and the very obvious corruption that was there. We saw that blackout on the Biden corruption for years, but they stepped their game up when those emails came out, the signed business documents and the eyewitness testimony came out. They stepped up their game. So they thought, hey, we can probably get away with it. That is what happened. That is my narrative, what happened. And I believe I have the facts and the data to support it because it fits the facts. And we're going to talk about Occam's razor here briefly, which is basically the most simple explanation that takes into account all the variables of the situation is probably the most likely one. And I would defend my scenario, my analysis, my narrative saying it is the simplest explanation of the behavior we're seeing. Because what other reason could they have to completely shut down and lock out Republican observers? There is no other explanation. They were doing something they didn't want us to see. Okay. So I talked about the hundreds of thousands, the 600,000 plus votes in Pennsylvania, the 300,000 votes in the Michigan area, the 600,000 votes in Nevada, and we don't know yet, but there was a lot of votes in Arizona as well because of Phoenix, the Phoenix area there. And now those will form what I believe is the most open and shut case to overturn these election results. We're going to talk about the next case that's open and shut, I believe, is equal protection violations. In counties, you had in Michigan and also, I believe, in Pennsylvania, other places, you had Democrat counties coordinating with Democrat candidates, sending out messages and contacting voters to let them know, hey, your ballot has a problem on it. You didn't sign it. You didn't put the date on it. Your fill-in is a little bit off-center. Can you come in and fix it? We want to make sure your ballot counts. Well, they did that in the Democrat-controlled counties. They did not allow that to happen in the Republican counties, the heavy Republican counties. Well, actually what happened is the Democrats violated the law and went ahead and did it, believing they'd get away with it. And the Republicans followed the law and didn't do it. So that's a clear case of a violation of equal protection. That is an open slam dunk case as well that it shouldn't invalidate the election. So those are the now there's a number of other court cases, and there's the sexy things like dead boat people voting out there. And there was a lot. Richard Barris showed analysis of, you know, something like 10,000. There was a lot of dead people voted. And another category of people voted is because in many of these states, they fought cleaning up the voter files. These were extremely dirty files where we had tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people on the voter file that were no longer there. Either they'd moved out of state or they were dead. And this allowed them, when they shut the doors, to bring in all these ballots. And with not being observed, they had the ballots they harvested from that were sent to dead people. They had the ballots that were harvested for people that had moved out of state. So that has allowed them to do that. And that was one of their critical things there. But there were some interesting statistical anomalies that will show up. And we'll talk about those very interesting statistical anomalies when we get back.
Reader enthusiasm for the dangerous Christmas ornament doesn't end. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Anytime I read a book where I want to find out what happens in the next chapter all the way to the last page of the book is a great book. This is the experience you and your children will have reading The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. I read the whole thing in a short time despite a busy schedule. The interesting plot lines has the flavor of realism because the author is writing from his own childhood experiences and ours as well. You will relate to the authentic family dynamics and the playground trials and triumphs described in the book. The book will also make you laugh as some of the characters have a great sense of humor, delivering good-natured jokes mixed with a dose of sarcasm. Most importantly, the book throughout has a moral dimension to it that takes it to a deeper level, making it a preferred selection to read to your kids. Enjoy! The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available in bookstores and libraries.
Quite frankly, folks, we have grown so accustomed to our normal everyday sin that we don't view it the way God does. We may be aware that certain thoughts or actions are wrong, but their utter repulsion is something we have difficulty seeing. When I was in college, I had a part-time job at a convalescent home, one that was not very well kept. The first day I arrived, I felt as though I wanted to stop breathing because there was a horrible stench. For about a week, I dreaded coming to work. As time went on, the stench bothered me less until eventually, I couldn't even smell it anymore. But this was not because the smell ever went away. Instead, I had actually gotten used to it. We get used to our sins, too. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
This is Mike Friedenberg sitting in for Bob Siegel. And before we took that nice little break there, we were talking about looking at some statistical analysis that really clearly showed something weird happened. And I say that something is fraud on a massive scale. So one of the things that is very interesting that has been revealed in analysis is that across Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, Michigan, and Wisconsin, we have 450,000 Biden-only votes. What that means is we have ballots where only Biden is filled in, and the other down-ticket items, the congressman's not filled in, the state legislature's not filled in, the propositions are not filled, and just Biden. I can tell you that is highly unusual. And that number doesn't happen in other states. You're not going to find anything like that number in Florida. You're not going to find that number in Ohio. And those are states, by the way, that did maintain strong voter integrity laws. You only find this kind of statistics in the states that behaved in the hinky fashion, the states that shut down voting and restarted it, the states that would not allow Republican observers. Now, these states now are generating statistically highly improbable, almost impossible numbers of Biden-only votes. So let's look at it a little bit more closely. All right. In Pennsylvania, there was something in the order of 98,000 Biden-only votes. Folks, the margin there is 46,000 right now. In Georgia, we have somewhere between 80 and 90,000 Biden-only votes, current margin of 14,000 votes there. Now, these are numbers that can easily flip the state back to Donald Trump. In Arizona, we have about 42,000 Biden-only votes, and about 11,000 is the current margin there. And there's some other things happening in Arizona. And we still haven't seen really what happened to Phoenix, as far as I'm concerned. Then in Michigan, we've got somewhere between 69,000 and 115,000 Biden-only votes. And I don't know the reasons for the variation on that. These are numbers that were put out by Sidney Powell, the Trump attorney. She's wouldn't want to be on the wrong side of her, I can tell you that. Okay. And that's a state where we're going to need the biggest amount of votes. But that's a state where I can show you how we can get this. Right now, the margin there is about 146,000 for Joe Biden. But there's some really hinky things that happen in Michigan. We'll talk about it. And then in Wisconsin, where Biden's supposedly ahead by about 20,000 votes, there was 62,000 Biden-only votes. So, folks, there was a lot of really strange things going on in Milwaukee, we ended up with 80% voter turnout. That's an urban area. That you don't end up with 80% voter turnout. There is some, and you saw huge net increases in some few key counties of how Biden did versus Hillary Clinton. And by that way, that's another thing we need to point out, that in these areas where we saw what looks like an obvious case of voter fraud, where we see this hinky behavior, that's the places where we see Joe Biden overperforming Barack Obama. Now, Barack Obama was not my favorite guy. I didn't like his public policy. I knew he was a bad left-winger when he first ran, but he fooled people into voting for him. And then people voted for him again. I was surprised by that because I thought, boy, he was such a horrible president the first term. But listen, putting that aside, my personal dislike of his policies, he was a good candidate. He was articulate. He was the first black candidate. People were excited. And we saw record numbers of African-Americans, black Americans turn out to vote for him. The idea that Biden is outperforming Barack Obama anywhere in these heavy urban areas? No, and he underperformed Obama everywhere else in the country. So only in the areas where we see clear signs of vote manipulation, fraud, do we see Biden outperforming Obama, Barack Obama, President Obama? So I've got to say that is something also to think about. But let's talk about Michigan for a second here, because there was a guy by the name of Dr. Shiva Adarai. He's a PhD from MIT, and on his team, he has a very experienced data analyst by the name of Phil Evans, who's an electrical engineer, does data analysis, and then Benny Smith, who is also an elections specialist. He's on the Board of Elections in Massachusetts, sits there, and he has many years of analyzing elections. So they did a mathematical model and an analysis of the voting in Michigan. Very, very interesting stuff. And I'm not going to go into this in too much depth because the math's not that complicated, actually, but it's too much to go in on this show. You could go onto YouTube, and he does a great video on this. And I believe that this, listening to some of the stuff that some of the Trump team are talking about, I believe this analysis may be part of their case for what happened in Michigan. They haven't named it out, but I believe what they're describing. Because what he shows, irrefutably, is there was an algorithm used to give votes to Biden and an algorithm used to take that exact same number of votes away from Donald Trump in a precinct by precinct level. And how that was done, we'll talk about briefly after that, because this goes to the Dominion machines, those famous Dominion machines that we're hearing about. Well, those machines, I was reserving judgment because you can hear these things. And, you know, we do get our right-wing conspiracy people. They're out there, too. And they can sometimes go off, you know, loose cannons, start talking about things before it's verified. But I'm beginning to think there's some real, that the smoke is there and there's some fire there on these Dominion machines. But let's talk about what they found. What they found is, at a high level, is in four of the most heavily populated counties, counties that could actually deliver the kind of margins, the kind of number of votes that I believe Biden needed to overtake Trump and put in a substantial win, they found that the counties, that the more Republican a county was, the more likely you were to see the vote switching. And the way they were able to analyze this is there was two types of voting you do in Michigan. You do straight ticket voting and split ticket voting. So let's say you're a Republican. You say, I'm just going to vote the entire Republican ticket. You hit the button, boom, you're done, and you're out you go. Or you can sit there and say, you know, I like Donald Trump, but, you know, that state legislator guy, that Republican, you know, he seems to have been such a squish and has betrayed us. I don't want to vote for him. So you do a split ticket. So what they found is the more Republican a county was, the steeper the curve, and the more likely the split ticket people were not to vote for Trump. So in the counties that weren't very Republican, you saw Trump pulling ahead of the other candidates, doing 5-10% more votes, which basically, by the way, is pretty normal. He's a very popular guy. If you look at the polling for Republicans, he was polling extremely well, 94% approval rating. Then you see as the precinct becomes more Republican, you begin to see, and by the way, if you look at statistics, it's a scatter plot that shows a linear relationship, and it's a downward curve that shows by the time you get to 30 or 40% Republican county, you've evened out the number of people. Some people are voting more for Trump. Some are voting less for Trump on the split ticket. And then you get to the point where 50, 60% of the split ticket people in the very Republican counties are voting against Trump. And I can just tell you, they did a thorough discussion on it, and this happened. It's precinct after precinct after precinct. This was an algorithm, a computer algorithm that shows this. And we're going to talk about those Dominion machines. By the way, I'm going to give away a little bit. Those machines do have the ability to do prorated type voting and do this kind of manipulation. So it's interesting. So he did analysis here. And in the three major counties analyzed, Trump's margin was reduced by a minimum of 138,000 votes. So let's just take a look here. So cumulatively, there was three counties there. Anyway, it ranged from one of the counties to 60,000 votes shift to 40,000 vote shifts. Anyway, it was a total of 138,000 votes shifted. So that was in Michigan alone. That basically, that if that's true, and I believe it's true, that almost gets you back to even. That might even get you back into recount territory. And other things happened in Michigan besides this. As I said, that was also the people, dead people voting. There was people out of state people voting. And another thing I'm going to mention here is, and this is sworn to by four separate affidavits. Four separate people saw this. 4:30 in the morning, the day of the next day, early morning after the election. So this is November 4th. Four people working in the centralized counting center for Pennsylvania heard election officials talking about that they were really worried they would not be able to make up the 100,000 votes. At 4:30 in the morning, out-of-state trucks pulled up with pallets of votes, over 100,000 votes, coming in through the back door. And as far as they could tell, and they were actually allowed to get close, the people that saw this, every one of the votes, those voting ballots they saw come in, were Biden-only votes. And they ran them through the machines. That's 100,000 votes. So that's how you overcome a major vote deficit, is that kind of action there. So you can go online and see that. As I said, it's the MIT PhD, and his name, and it's still on Google, I mean on YouTube. And let me just, I'll give the spelling of the name in case you want to look at it, because it's a very interesting discussion. It's Dr. Shiva Ayyaduri, AYYADURAI, and MIT. And the name of this presentation is Mathematical Analysis of Trump-Biden 2020 Election Vote Counts in Four Counties in the State of Michigan. So that shifted hundreds of thousands of votes. And now let's briefly talk, because we don't have much time here, I was just going to say here, about the Dominion machines. Maria Bartiromo, Sunday Morning Futures, had a fantastic segment this morning with both Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell. And the discussion was very interesting, because they now have done some more investigation on these machines. And what they have discovered, number one, is that these machines can be externally accessed. The machines have the ability to adjust vote totals. They can also, using the back-end software, they can predict future vote totals. And these machines absolutely can be used to change election results on a precinct level. And these machines, by the way, were first, the software that's underlying them was first developed by Chavez out of Venezuela and friends of his. These are the communists there. And it's the underlying software that's being used by the Dominion system. So the machines are going to be a significant story, and that would be worth a whole segment on itself. And, you know, that's something we need to look at. But just to summarize, you can do something. Call Congressman Daryl Issa. Tell him to stand with Trump. Do contribute to the Trump campaign, because they need your money, and that also shows support. And really, we do need to pray. We need to pray for the people that are making critical decisions right now. Pray for the Trump lawyers. Pray for their physical protection. Pray for everybody involved with this. But particularly pray for the judges and the justices that are going to be making these decisions. And with that, thank you for listening tonight. And Bob Siegel will be back next week, I believe, at this regular time. And once again, this is the Bob Siegel Show, with Mike Friedenberg sitting in for Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show podcast is a production of Bob Siegel and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/Bob.